Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello there from New York. How are you all? Are you all looking forward to Christmas? I'm just about to take my final flight for the year back to London. What a crazy and amazing year. I think it's been 84 flights I've taken this year. So very tired, but it's been such an incredible year. I'm grateful to so many people. So I hope you all have an amazing Christmas. Anyway, welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, which is brought to you by Kraken, the best and most secure place to buy, sell and trade Bitcoin. I'm your host, Peter McCormack, and today I've got an interview with Michael Peterson from Bitcoin Beach, a Bitcoin youth program in El Salvador. But before that, I have a message from my show sponsors, and definitely check them out. It's Christmas, give them a listen. It is the sponsors that enable me to travel around and do all these great interviews. So first up, we have the amazing Dropbit. Merry Christmas to Dropbit. The best mobile wallet in the business, my favorite Bitcoin wallet. And you know what? They've absolutely killed it this year. They've done so many amazing things. When I first started working them, they were like, we're like a Venmo for Bitcoin. We've made it really easy to send and receive Bitcoin, and you can even text it to people. But now they've added so many more things. You can tweet Bitcoin to people. They've added support for Lightning. You can buy Bitcoin directly within the app. They now support BETCH32 addresses, and they've got so many things coming next year. Lightning's now been enabled for everyone, so definitely go and check them out. Download Dropbit, have a play. It is available for the iPhone and Android. Just head over to dropbit.app, which is dropbit.app. And also, we have Wire. And as their sponsorship comes to a close, I do want to say a massive thanks to Michael and the team, and also wish them a Merry Christmas too. But have you checked out Wire? Let's send them out with a bang. Go and check out what they're doing. They are helping companies across the space offer Bitcoin onboarding. So whether you are a solo developer or a large team, if you are looking to simplify user onboarding and offer your users a fast and easy way to purchase Bitcoin, then you definitely need to get in touch with Wire. They've been killing it since 2013, and they take care of all those pain in the ass items. They sort out compliance, payments, and liquidity so you can focus on building your core offering. Your idea could be the next killer app, so do not let the regulators kill it. If you want to find out more, reach out to Wire or create a developer account at sendwire.com, which is sendwyre.com. And also, my newest sponsor for December, Scott Offord, and his company, Crypto Mining Tools. Scott is a Bitcoin mining consultant, so I want you to check out his Bitcoin profitability calculator. It's available at cryptomining.tools. Enter your estimated uptime to get realistic profit projections. It also includes the impact of the Bitcoin halving next year, so definitely check that out. If you're wondering which miner is the most efficient or has the best chance of breaking even, you should try out their interactive hardware comparison chart as well. As an ASIC mining equipment broker, Scott helps you make data-backed business decisions. He can help you find hosting, raw power, and the land to get your miners up and hashing. If you want to find out more, reach out to Scott on Telegram or Twitter at OfforedScott, which is OfforedScott, or visit Crypto Mining Tools, which is CryptoMining.tools. Okay, so on to the show, and this is a really cool one. So while I was out in Uruguay for Le BitConf, I got talking to Michael outside the hotel we were staying at, and he told me about this youth program that he was running in El Salvador and invited me out. He said, like, if you ever want to come out, you ever want to see it, I'll pick you up from the airport and I'll take you around and show you what we're doing. And as I was out in South America and I was off to Bolivia, I was like, do you know what, let's just do it. So I booked a flight from Bolivia up to El Salvador. And yeah, Michael picked me up, took me down, showed me his project. So the project is called Bitcoin Beach, and they pay young people in the town in Bitcoin to do jobs that benefit the local area. So kids can clean up polluted rivers, roadside rubbish, or help old people. And they can learn about Bitcoin in the process and earn money. And it's a really cool concept. And they've also supported this by onboarding local businesses, shops, cafes, hairdressers, etc., to accept the Bitcoin. So this creates kind of a circular local economy. Look, it isn't perfect, you know. Michael accepts that, and we talked about issues such as volatility and managing private keys, but it is at the same time an interesting project, and I think with the right support, Michael can expand this and really help a bunch of young kids avoid joining gangs and maintaining their education. There was another cool thing that happened on this trip, though. While I was out there, I didn't have any cash on me, so I always follow the travel advice, and it says don't get any money out of the airport because people are waiting and watching in the airport and they might follow you. So I didn't have any money on me, and we went for dinner at one of these roadside restaurants. You know, it's like a roadside, kind of like a shack where they cook outside and you sit there and you have dinner. And I didn't have any money, and it was one of the ones that accepted Bitcoin. So I actually ended up paying for it in Lightning. You can see that up on Twitter, so it's worth checking out. So yeah, very cool interview, very cool project. Really nice to talk to Michael, and I also got a few minutes with somebody from the local area, works with him, Jorge. That's appended to the interview as well. Yeah, so I hope you enjoy that. If you've got any questions, do feel free to reach out to me. It's hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Yeah, I'm about to fly home in a few hours. I'm in New York right now. I just recorded a final interview with Matt O'Dell, but I'm off back to London. It's been a great year. So many amazing things have happened. I've got so many things planned for next year as well. I'm looking at the introduction of video, which should be cool. Anyway, I wish you all a Merry Christmas. If you've got any questions, do feel free to reach out to me. Morning, Mike.
Good morning, Peter.
Thank you for having me in El Salvador.
Yeah, I'm stoked you're here.
There's a quick turnaround from invite to here. What was it, a couple of days?
Yeah, you're pretty crazy. I didn't expect you to take me up on it that quick. That was pretty cool.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, it's a, what was it? Two flights of about cumulative 6 hours and a layover. Whereas if I'd have tried to come from the UK, it would have been a lot longer. And, you know, while I'm here.
Yeah, yeah. While you're in Latin America, why doesn't it hit it all?
A beautiful country. And actually, I think I've really fall in love with Latin America while I'm here.
Yeah, Latin America just has a certain feel. I mean, the people just kind of live in the day, and it's enjoyable. They're enjoyable to be around.
It also feels like there's a lot of unity amongst Latin Americans, while at the same time, a lot of division. Like, it feels like they all feel like they're one, as a, culturally, but then they have their differences politically.
Yeah, no, definitely. You see, it's hard to really explain why there's that dichotomy, but they have a lot of similarities, but then there is some real huge differences, often violent differences, and so.
Yeah. So El Salvador's now your home?
Yeah, we've been living here full-time for 6 years, kind of part-time for about 8 years before that.
What was that like as a transition to you?
It was mostly rough on the kids. They were 9 and 7 at that age, and so they had a lot of good friendships in the U.S., and so for them to make that adjustment here and not speak the language and feel like an outsider, but now they love it. Now they have a great group of friends, and, you know, they'll always be a little bit of an outsider just because they look different from everybody else and their accent's a little different, but they feel like this is home.
Well, watching them last night amongst their friends, they didn't seem like outsiders. They just seemed one of the gang, especially your daughter. I mean, she speaks the language very, very well, clearly, and she seems very rooted with her friends. I mean, I guess maybe with newer outsiders, they seem like an outsider, but amongst their friends last night, I did see that.
Yeah, I don't think their friends even really view them as outsiders. I think sometimes they feel a little bit, you know, just because they look different from everybody else. You have a picture in there, the one white person standing out in the picture. But amongst the local kids here, they've been really cool to them. And yeah, it's nice where we live, too. They can just walk over to people's houses and play. So it's different than if we were in the U.S. where you have to drive everywhere.
Yeah, nice how everyone was just out late playing and hanging out. I thought that was really cool. You know, it did make me think back to home. I was like, oh, if we were at home, we'd be sat on the couch watching TV, everyone looking at their phones. And here everyone was out in the park and playing football.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things about most people not having cars. Most of life happens within walking distance. So whether you're in the U.S. or Europe, we're used to being able to travel everywhere and our lives are really divided. Where here, most people's life all happens within walking distance.
So what came first? Did the choice to come and live here come first, or the idea of doing the Bitcoin project come first?
So definitely living here. We were living here for several years before the Bitcoin opportunity came about.
All right, okay. So talk me through that then. So what were you doing before the Bitcoin project? We never even talked about that.
Yeah, so we do a lot of different things here in El Salvador, working with different missionaries and church groups that are doing, like running children's homes, orphanages, working with gang rehabilitation, working with sex victims of sex trafficking. So we kind of have an umbrella organization that helps all the small NGOs that are working in El Salvador.
Okay. I didn't realize. Okay, let's talk about the Bitcoin project. Then let's talk a bit more about El Salvador, because we talked about some of the gang problems yesterday. That was interesting. So for any of the bits you will want to talk about that, we'll cover that. So you're here. You're helping the NGOs, and then suddenly, like, the opportunity for a Bitcoin project. Were you already a Bitcoiner? Were you already aware of it?
Yeah, I've been following Bitcoin since the early days. couple times. I tried to buy it in, you know, I think in 2013 and then again in 2015, but it was still too technical for me at that time. So I kind of gave up and threw up my hands. But then I think in 16, I actually started accumulating some Bitcoin and really reading up on it and following it. I'm a libertarian at heart, so it just kind of ticked all the boxes for me.
Oh, yeah, because you were telling me last night, what were the two books? You got Atlas Shrugged and Fountainhead?
And the Fountainhead, yeah.
Yeah, you got your daughter to read those. At what? How old was it? 13 or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you already were a Bitcoin, you already bought some, and then someone approaches you and said, look, we've got an idea for a project. Let's talk about
Well, actually, so I had another NGO tell me that they'd been given a Bitcoin, and they just happened to ask me, hey, do you know anything about that? They knew I'm kind of focused on financial aspects, and so I was super excited to hear that they'd been given this Bitcoin and was helping them think through different ways they could use it. And after that, they said, well, hey, this guy has more Bitcoin that he's looking to invest in nonprofit projects, and so would you like to meet him? And, of course, I was super stoked because I was like, well, you hear about these things happening, but, you know, I never had thought we would have that opportunity. And so we actually met with the manager of this guy who was an early Bitcoin investor, and he basically just said, you know, I have made all this money in Bitcoin. I'm never going to be able to use it all myself, and I want to use it to do good things in the world. But I also really believe that Bitcoin should be part of that. Like, Bitcoin is going to be part of the thing that changes the world, especially in impoverished, poor nations that have had kind of poor rule of law. And so he said, you know, we're looking for projects that will actually utilize Bitcoin, not just convert it into fiat. That's not what we're looking for. We want them to use it in real ways. And so for me, that was like a dream come true to really think about how we could set up a Bitcoin ecosystem from scratch and have somebody that was willing to back that.
Okay, so you've got the kind of like offer. The first thing is you have to go and come up with a proposal for an idea? You have to go brainstorm an idea? Or did you know straight away what you were going
to
do?
No, I had to go back and brainstorm. They made it clear they weren't looking for, you know, them to donate Bitcoin and you just to do a one-off transaction, convert it to gift cards or do a, you know, kind of one movement thing. They were looking for a project that would actually help Bitcoin circulate. And so I thought about the communities that we work in already and the lack of economic opportunity and jobs there. And so how could we use this Bitcoin that was given to us to create jobs? And it was kind of a chicken of the egg thing. If we're paying people in Bitcoin, where are they going to spend it? But how are we going to get stores and stuff to accept Bitcoin unless people are out there looking to spend it? And so we kind of had to do the both at the same time. We started paying kids to work in different work programs in Bitcoin. At the same time, we worked with the different stores to be able to accept it. So there's been some hurdles along the way, but it's been a lot of fun.
All right, so we'll start with the kids first and we'll cover the stores afterwards. So the goal was to offer them an opportunity to make money, like a little bit of pocket money. Are these kids that are still in school or have quit school?
Yeah, so we primarily work with kids that are still in school. That's one of the stipulations for our work program.
Okay.
We definitely want to make sure that they are not leaving school to be able to work, that this will be an addition to their schooling, just because that's the most important thing longer term in life, that they have an education. So they'll work after school and on Saturdays. And it is pocket money, but a lot of them actually will use it to supplement and help their families. I mean, these are families that are living on a couple hundred dollars a month, a lot of them. And so for their kid to be able to make, you know, $100 a month, that makes a big difference in the family.
Well, there's somebody yesterday made $100. Wasn't that in a week?
Yeah, that was some of the ones that had been working. I think they were being paid for 2 weeks at that time.
Okay.
And so,
okay,
yeah.
So the money is very helpful to them as well then?
Definitely.
And what's the kind of work they're doing?
So mostly just community stuff. So we have, there's a big pollution problem in El Salvador. It's been historically, people have just kind of trashed the country. And so we're trying to change that culture, especially in El Zante where we're at. And so we have the kids cleaning the river, picking up trash. They'll also do like minor road repair works in different areas where there's potholes and stuff like that. And then working with some of the elderly in the community, doing outreach to them, seeing what kind of needs they have and doing kind of little chores for them.
So filling the gaps and things just around here in El Zante.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
So when you first started recruiting the kids, you said to them, look, we've got some work program here. Talk me through how you recruited them, what you were telling them.
So Jorge, who's kind of my right-hand man, local guy that works with us, he has already really had a heart to reach out to the kids in our community. A lot of the kids are drawn into the gangs here in El Salvador, and a lot of, I'd say 90% of them grow up without ever even knowing their fathers.
90%?
That would be what I would estimate. Most of their fathers are either in jail or in the gangs or in the U.S. working. And so it's a huge missing component, and there's a lot of family breakdown here in El Salvador. So Jorge's really wanted to invest in the kids and walk alongside them. And so when I told him we had this opportunity to actually give them some work and allow them to make some money, he ran wild with it. He came up with all kinds of different ideas of things that we could do. And it's the kids have been super excited about it. I mean, we have more kids entering every week.
And how many kids you got now, do you reckon?
I think we have about 25 kids in the actual work project. And then we have other kids that we are sponsoring to go to university. And kids that we are, every semester, the ones that get really good grades, they get a bonus in Bitcoin for that.
And the ones that are around here, even here in El Zonte, they could easily get drawn into gangs here?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much everywhere in El Salvador. The gangs control a big part of life. And even where we live, it's definitely a gang-controlled region. And so that's a big thing, is us just trying to keep them out of it. And even a lot of the gang members that are here, they don't want their brothers and sisters to continue in that lifestyle. So even the gang members themselves are excited about what we're doing.
Yeah, that was quite an interesting thing you were telling me about that last night, that didn't you meet with and talk with one of the gang leaders, and they wanted his brother or somebody to, or he wanted to support what you were doing?
Yeah, so Jorge was actually approached by one of the main leaders of the gang here in town, and he asked if we would start this program in kind of the poorer part of town. We were doing it on the beach side, but he asked if we would do it kind of where more of the locals live, and a lot of the gang members live in that area, and he wanted them to have a program, you know, that they could walk to safely, and so that their brothers and sisters and kids would have a different life than the one they have.
Did that surprise you when you heard that?
It did a little bit, but I do know in general the draw of the gangs is because there's not other opportunity. And so the longer we're here, the more I realize that even the gangs themselves, most of them don't want to see that lifestyle continue. They would rather have a better future for their own kids and siblings.
Do you think that's a recent thing? This is like a cultural change, or?
I think the gangs in El Salvador have probably been strong here for about 20 years. And so I think you see some of the original gang members realizing that the life choices they've made were probably not the best. And there's been a lot of pain and grief and death and time in jail. And they don't want that for their kids. Everybody wants the best for their kids.
It's strange that you say we're in a gang-controlled area, because I haven't felt anything. You know, in my head, I thought we would drive in, I would see guys with long blue shorts, high socks, you know, big T-shirts and tattoos all over them. And I've not seen anything to make me think this is a gang-controlled area.
Yeah, I think that most of it happens behind the scenes. And it's actually a lot less now than it has been in the past. We definitely see the things improving. And I think part of that is just the opportunity that the kids have, the park that we built over in that region. Mm-hmm. And just the kids knowing that if they continue on to high school, there's an opportunity for them to go to university. And so we're really seeing a cultural change even in our community.
Do you feel maybe a weird sense of protection from the gang? Do you feel they would protect you?
I think that they like what we're doing in the community. And I think that if there was going to be harm coming to us and they knew about it, that they would probably step in and do something about it, just because they like what we're doing in the community. And so I don't think they want that to stop.
Amazing. Okay, so when you first recruited your first set of kids, talk to me about explaining Bitcoin to them.
Yeah, so that was a little bit of a learning curve. We got a little too technical in the outset and trying to explain to them, you know, about holding your keys and, you know, all the different attributes and how it fluctuates and goes up and down. And you could just see in their eyes they were just kind of overwhelmed. And so we kind of scaled that back and just set up a phone wallet for them and helped them make their first transaction. And when they did, it was like a light bulb went off. Like, oh, wow, I just moved money from your phone to my phone, and just like that. And so we found that that's the important first step, is to show them how to do it. and then try to teach them more of the technical aspects behind it.
I guess historically they wouldn't have had debit or credit cards, so they never had electronic money. Everything would have been cash.
Yeah, I mean, you do have some, but most of the kids in the village would never, and the people, their families, most of them never would have had those. So they know they exist in theory, but most of them have never interacted with them. So for them, this is the first time for them to see money be able to move, you know, electronically.
Yeah, I guess that is a kind of wow moment.
Yeah, I mean, definitely some of the stores that are part of our project now, I mean, they're roadside stalls that, you know, don't even have electricity. And, you know, they're taking mobile payments in Bitcoin on their mobile phone. I mean, it's just crazy. These are places that would never be able to take credit cards, but now they can take payments over the phone.
Well, if you think about it, last night, you know, I had to buy something. I don't have cash. Like, the one thing I didn't have was cash. I read on the warnings on the websites were don't get out cash at the airport or street ATMs, because these are the places where people will see you and follow you. The best place to do it is inside a mall. So we didn't get a chance to go to a mall. So I don't have any cash on me. Yet I was able to buy for dinner with Bitcoin because I had it.
Yeah, how awesome was that? That you're in this rural village in El Salvador and you can use Bitcoin when you can't even do that a lot of times in the UK or the US.
It's just amazing. I could pay. It was actually a solution. Not something I expected to see, Mike's. Okay, so you first just... If anything, it was just like an alternative currency to them. It wasn't. There was nothing about how the technology worked. You didn't bother with that. Here's a currency. It's on your phone, and you can spend it.
Yeah, that's how we initially introduced it to them. And then as they've gotten more into it, we've kind of started to share with them how they can save in it and why we think this is long-term a better asset to save in. And so we're trying to encourage some saving programs. And that's what is nice about the conference we were just at in Uruguay, was learning some of the solutions for saving and investing through Bitcoin. And so we're going to be rolling that out with a lot of them.
But there isn't a culture of saving, right? You told me that last night.
No, most of the people here are just in survival mode. I mean, when the average family lives on $200 to $300 a month, literally they're just living hand to mouth. And so the culture of saving is something we're trying to instill in the kids, because if they can accumulate capital, then they can have businesses, they can participate in the growing tourism industry here in El Salvador. And so that's what we want to make sure, that they're able to participate and see a brighter future, that they don't feel like they have to, you know, try to sneak into the U.S. or leave their family and home to go somewhere else, but that they can enjoy their dreams here.
Is it working? Are any of them saving?
We have seen a few of them, yeah. They've been saving up, and I don't know how long-term that'll be, but they're saving up, you know, even to buy Christmas presents for their family and things like that that they've never even been able to experience before.
And they have an option of both the Bitcoin base layer or Lightning for payment, right?
Yeah, we started out with Bitcoin, but we've kind of converted everything over to Lightning just because of the fees and how quick Lightning, you know, is able to transact.
Okay, so we'll talk about that for you guys as a business, but in terms of the next level of education, how did you explain Lightning to them?
We basically just told them it was the same as Bitcoin, but that was cheaper to use and faster, and so that was just a different application that they could use for that.
And they got around that okay?
Yeah. You know, they had learned on the other application, so it was a little bit of an adjustment. But once they started using it, they're like, okay, this is better.
We also had that kid yesterday who still didn't want to receive his payment in Lightning, didn't he? He's like, still pay me, even though he knew the fees were higher.
Yeah, he had, you know, he was just used to using the other one. And I think there's a little bit of a reluctance that, what if I do something wrong or if I screw it up? And so, but I think even as we were talking to him yesterday, he realized what the benefits were.
It's funny, I've historically preferred the base chain. I don't know why. I just have. But I've often thought, well, what's the actual use case for Lightning? I mean, like, I understand the use case is, you know, faster and cheaper, but I use the base chain all the time for invoicing, and I very rarely use Lightning. It made sense yesterday when I was here, because you don't want to sit and wait for 6 confirmations if you're going to the store. You know, if I was buying dinner, I don't want to sit and wait for an hour for her to confirm I've actually paid her. So it kind of made sense. And what it made sense to me is, like, this little circular economy that you've created.
Yeah, it definitely makes it possible. I mean, we have people that are literally doing, you know, 25-cent transactions, buying tortillas, you know, for their mom you can't do that on the base chain. I mean, it's just really, really challenging to be able to do that. And so the more we got into it, the more we realized that Lightning was going to be the solution.
Have you gone to the next step of starting to teach them about saving their private keys? Because when I got back here last night, one of the things I was thinking about is about key management. And I was thinking, well, most people, they'll either write them down somewhere or they may get something like a billfold and have it stamped out, and then they'll hide one in a safe in the loft of their house and maybe one at their parents. Where I was thinking, well, here, there's people who are living in essentially huts, right? They don't have the same kind of security we have. So key management for somebody in a living either in poverty or in a developing country is going to be a very different scenario from a wealthy Western speculator.
Yeah, definitely. That's been something we've wrestled with from the beginning, and how early do we introduce that? You know, initially we're talking about small amounts of money, and so we've tried to keep it simple. We found if you try to load too much, it, you know, right away, it just confuses them. And so over the next months, we'll be focusing more on key management, and it'll be a learning process for us too, for them in the situation they're in. What is the securest way? From what we've seen, usually the way people lose money is by losing their password or losing their keys, and so that's the thing we're kind of most focused on down here.
Or if they lost their phone, that would be a problem,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So we've basically told them it's like having cash in your wallet. If you lose it, it's going to be very hard to recover.
But it would be nice for them to have a way of storing their private keys. I just don't I know my key management solution, but it's very much a Western-based home scenario. It's designed around a Western-based lifestyle. It wouldn't work living in the same arrangements they have here. And that's, you know, a lot of people talk about, well, banking the unbanked. Okay, if we're going to bank the unbanked, usually the unbanked tend to be in the third world or in developing countries. Have we really thought through key management in those scenarios? And I can't think of a time where somebody has now. It's almost something I've thought of in this last 24 hours.
Yeah, I mean, we're not teaching them how to use a Ledger Nano, and you know, they're holding most of their stuff on their phone apps right now is the solution we're using, just because we want to keep it simple. But I think going forward, probably the best solutions, and I know it's unpopular to say, but I think the best solutions for this group will probably be custodial options, and even working with, you know, like your sponsor BlockFi, where they can be investing some of their money and getting interest on it and not so focused on the key management side of it. And I think that we can learn a lot from working in the developing world of what is going to take Bitcoin mainstream, because us in the Bitcoin community, we're so focused on the technical aspects. But if we really want to hit the mainstream, we just got to make it easy and people not have to really think about it. And so I think what we're seeing here is you just got to keep it simple for them.
Yeah, the custodial versus non-custodial does come up a lot. And I understand the people who are anti-custodial. You know, it's antithetical to Bitcoin. Not your keys, not your Bitcoin.
Yeah, no, I totally understand too.
I totally understand it. But I'm with you in this scenario, meeting the kids last night, what is best for them? Teaching them a way to do they memorize their 24-word seed? Do they have it on a piece of paper, like hidden in the cracks of the wall? Like, I don't know. Or is a better scenario for there to be some kind of custodial online solution, and they maybe have to sacrifice that part because it is not possible for them to, you know, the combination of cultural, educational, technical, home life, it's a far safer solution for them to put their trust in a third party, which I know will piss a lot of people off, but I can see why that might be the solution.
And I think it doesn't have to be the long-term solution. I think as they get further along and as they're able to learn more about it and have a better understanding, then we can move them over to non-custodial. But I think the key for Bitcoin adoption is just getting people in the door. Once they kind of see how well it works, then they're willing to put the effort in to become more familiar with all the aspects of it. But if we put all these walls up to begin with, they just kind of will, you know, not even want to enter in.
Yeah, it's almost like a scenario of my father. Like, he doesn't have Bitcoin. He's thought of buying it a couple of times. And he has three options. I buy it and manage it for him. which means I can steal it. The second option is he uses an exchange, a Kraken or a Coinbase, and they custody it for him and he trusts them. Not your keys, not your Bitcoin. Yeah. Or he custodies it itself. And the third solution is a terrible one for him. He can barely work a remote control. He will almost certainly make a mistake and lose it. So he essentially, and this is a guy for, you know, my entire life I've had to program TVs, fix his computer, teach him to email. He still doesn't understand the difference between a search engine and a browser. It doesn't matter how many times I explain it, he can't tell the difference. So in that scenario, somebody like that, perhaps there's lower risk in a custodial situation, which I know is antithetical. We keep having to say this.
Yeah, and but I think sometimes we can focus too much on that aspect. I mean, of course, we understand what Bitcoin stands for and what it allows, and the fact that it allows us to not have to ask permission to use our money. There is no third-party intermediary, but there also is real risk of people losing their Bitcoin, and I think that happens much more often than people being blocked by a third party or a custodian, and so I think we need to find the balance there, especially if we want this to go mainstream. I think the solution right now that for Bitcoin and everybody having to hold their own keys and manage their own Bitcoin, it'll probably only take us to a very small percentage of the population in the world. And yeah. So,
and I guess in, you know, El Salvador being now a dollarized economy, there's a lower risk of they're not at the risk of Argentinian levels of inflation deflating their currency. They don't have bank accounts, so they're at less. They're not. They don't have the risk of a Corralito where people can't access their money. This really is actually just an opportunity. I guess it's economic growth, right? It's an opportunity to earn and spend, and you've created the circular economy that allows that. So the thing we need to probably add to that is then talk about the stores, because one of the I put the stuff up on Twitter yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Lots of great feedback. Some kind of negative comments. One person said, well, where are they going to spend it?
Well, that's why we've worked to develop the economy here. So we have a number of stores that are accepting it, and then we're helping those stores set up their own accounts. So sometimes they will need to convert it back to fiat to pay their suppliers, and that's fine. We're trying to, you know, it's a chicken and the egg thing. You have to prime the pump and get it moving within the community. And so we have a number of places they can spend it. They can also use apps like BitRefill. They can buy phone credit for their phones here. All the carriers allow for that. The major supermarket here, they can get credit for the supermarket through BitRefill. And so there are lots of options. They can buy plane fare for relatives that are coming to visit. The real holy grail, what we're trying to do is get people to start, who have family members in the U.S. that send them money every month, to have them start sending that in Bitcoin. El Salvador has about $5 billion a year that comes in remittances from the U.S. and Western Union and the other money service agencies. They siphon off like 5 to 10% of that. So that's a huge chunk coming from the poorest of the poor. And so if we can get them sending that in Bitcoin and have that going into their pocket instead of the big companies, it can make a huge difference here.
Next up, I talked to Michael Moore about Bitcoin in El Salvador, but before that, I've got a message from my amazing sponsors. So first up, we have the most secure and most badass exchange out there. It's Kraken, the mighty Kraken. Without doubt, the best place to buy, sell, and trade Bitcoin. So we've covered so many things this year with Kraken, covered why they are the best exchange, why they're the most secure exchange, and if you didn't listen to my show with Nick Pococo, the chief security officer, definitely go and check that out. But they've added so much in there for traders. They've recently announced Kraken Pro, their beautiful mobile-first app to allow you to trade Bitcoin on the go. They added that to Kraken.com, which is the best place to buy, sell, and trade digital currencies. They offer you margin trading with up to 5x leverage. They've got the Kraken OTC desk for your large trades with private and personalized services. And they've got Crypto Watch, where you can trade multiple crypto exchanges from a single platform. They've absolutely crushed it all year. Love them. Love Kraken. Big thanks to the whole team supporting the show. Big thanks to Jesse. Looking forward to another great year with them next year. If you want to find out more, head over to Kraken.com or download the app, which is available for the iPhone and Android. Just search for Kraken Pro, which is KrakenPro. And lastly, and not leastly, are my friends over at BlockFi. Merry Christmas, BlockFi. Thank you for everything you've done. You've been supporting my show now for like 15 months. I love you guys so much. I caught up with the team in Uruguay. I got dinner with Florian Zach. We talked about the plans for next year. There's loads of stuff coming, but there is one thing coming, and that is very, very exciting. I cannot wait to tell you all about it. For what they do, they are best in the sector. They are building a powerhouse of Bitcoin financial services. So if you want a crypto loan, whatever you want to get, if you want to treat yourself to a Cybertruck, if you want to take a trip to the moon, or you've just got to get your taxes sorted, you've got to pay the man, then BlockFi's got you covered. Also, if you want to earn interest on your Bitcoin, Ether, or GUSD, well, they've dropped all minimum deposits. They've removed the early withdrawal penalty, and you can receive interest payments in the currency of your choice. I am a customer. I do love getting my interest every month. But if you are interested yourself, you should do your own research and then head over to blockfi.com, which is BLOCKFI.com.
So the stores who are now accepting Bitcoin, let me ask a question on that. So they take the Bitcoin, they pay, are these family businesses or will they have staff?
They're family businesses, but some of them will have staff also.
Do they have the opportunity to convert that back to dollars if they need?
Yeah, so we will help them provide a liquidity solution to convert that back to dollars. We will either buy it back from them, or right now we're working with Athena ATM, Bitcoin ATMs. They're going to put a Bitcoin ATM here in El Zante, and so they'll have that option also. But there's also, you know, whether it's BitPay or there's a few other companies we've been talking to that, that they can set up accounts for and just send it, and they'll automatically convert it for them.
And are they happy receiving Bitcoin? How do they feel about it? Have you talked to them?
Yeah, they've been really happy. One, it's additional customers. I mean, a lot of these were kids and other customers that didn't have the funds before, and so they've seen a huge uptick in sales. Mm-hmm. But they also said just on the security front, it's been a lot better for them because now they're not holding all this cash, not having to run to the bank all the time to deposit it, and so it's actually much easier for them to handle.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Okay, so the big question, and we talked about this yesterday, but we should talk about it here. What about the volatility?
The volatility has definitely been an issue. Not so much for the kids in the program, the different people we're paying in Bitcoin. They're usually spending it, you know, on a fairly good rate, and so they're not holding a lot, so the volatility hasn't really hurt them. For the stores, it's definitely an issue. And so to make sure they don't get a bad taste in their mouth right off the bat, we have agreed to help mitigate any losses they might face in the first few months of the program till they can kind of learn to balance the currency risk. And so during these 3 months, if there's a really down week, we will goose up their accounts so that they're even. But then they also have to see when it rises and the potential with that. And
do they have to pay you back when it rises?
No. They're in a win-win solution. Yeah. So I guess
ideally you'll eventually get them to a situation whereby any Bitcoin they have is automatically converted to dollar?
That would be, we'd like to have them maybe saving half of it and have that as a long-term savings program, but okay, keep that in Bitcoin, but then convert maybe half of it that they need to pay their suppliers and that sort of thing. So they can kind of still benefit from what we feel will be the long-term appreciation of Bitcoin, but be able to carry on their, you know, they obviously have to pay for the goods that they're selling, and so they need a solution for that.
And how many stores do you have signed up?
So right now we have two stores, Pupuseria, which is kind of the local fast food restaurant in El Salvador. We have a haircut place, a place that does nails, and then we have a coffee shop that will be starting next week, and that's where we're going to put the Bitcoin ATM.
Nice, nice. So it's growing. You have got a good kind of like circular economy here.
Yeah, we haven't had any complaints from the people. They have plenty of places to spend it, and it's most of these are kids that don't really leave the community anyways, and so these are the natural places they'd be shopping anyways.
So what are the challenges you're running into with this? What are the difficult side of it?
One of the initial challenges was the size of the transactions that we're doing. They're really small, and so when we were doing everything on chain, obviously the fees were a component of that, and the time that it would take to receive confirmations. And one thing, I've been in the Bitcoin space for a while, but I'm still definitely learning and I'm not an expert. And one thing that surprised me that I hadn't realized was an issue was when you accumulate a bunch of small transactions and then you try to move those out of your wallet, I guess the size of that transaction is super big and it's very expensive to move. And so we were, the stores that were receiving all the transactions, when they went to move them, they took a big hit on those fees. And so that was something we had to find a solution to, and that's why we moved everything over to Lightning.
Are there any other challenges or any other observations you have of Bitcoin as somebody who's creating a community around it that maybe others aren't aware of?
I think that you're always going to have a natural skepticism to promises of what Bitcoin can achieve. And I think specifically in what we're doing, because we're employing the youth, and they're, you know, is always worried that maybe this is a scam or maybe we're seeking something out of it for ourselves. But I think the longer term, you know, they see, obviously we're not personally benefiting from this. This is something just for the community. And so that just takes a little bit of time and trust to overcome those things.
And education and I guess the magic moment of first receiving, first spending, and because it seems all natural for them now.
Yeah, yeah. Once they make a couple transactions, it's like they've been doing it their whole life. We have found, initially we planned to work more with the parents, but we found that it's much better to start with the kids and allow the kids to teach their parents about it. I mean, that's how I learn about technology things, like from my kids. So
I just told you about my dad. There is a fair and solid argument that people would say, well, you could have done this with dollars.
You could. And that's something that we've been very cognizant of from the beginning. But we think because the economy in El Salvador is so dependent on money sent back from the U.S., that there's a huge competitive advantage. If they can start receiving that in Bitcoin, they'll save all the money from that. You also have the security aspect of it for both the stores and the individuals. They're not walking around with a bunch of cash. They're not worried about getting robbed in that way. And so we feel that's beneficial. And then also, these people don't have any banking solutions. And so this is opening them up to being able to have a savings account that earns interest, being able to have a vehicle that, you know, they could one day possibly even get loans in. And so it's opening this whole new world to them that they couldn't have if they were just dealing in U.S. dollars.
I guess also, though, you know, if we're fair, if you end up building a, you know, Bitcoin economy here, rather than walking around with dollars, they may be walking around with Bitcoin, and people would be aware. You know, there's a lot of security fears with Bitcoin. Have you had any of those kind of worries that people would come in and try and extort the Bitcoin rather than cash?
I mean, it's obviously always a concern, but I think that, you know, cash is always the easiest thing to steal from somebody. And even though it's still possible with Bitcoin, it does take another level of sophistication, and it's a little bit easier to trace. I mean, cash is basically untraceable. And so we think that it's still, you know, while it's not perfect, it definitely is an advantage to cash.
Has the government regulated cryptocurrencies?
The government here, from my understanding, is still kind of in a wait-and-see mode. I think they're waiting to see what the rest of the world does. They did issue something on ICOs 2 years ago that those aren't allowed, which I think was a good thing. But with Bitcoin, they're kind of in a wait-and-see mode. We'll see what happens when we bring the ATM in.
Right, okay. Because it was interesting. Bolivia was the first country I visited where it was banned.
Oh, really? I didn't realize it's banned there.
No, I didn't. I didn't realize until about a day before I went. And I met somebody there, and they said, look, people use it, nobody cares, but you can get arrested for it, you know, if you have got it, which was quite interesting. Are you aware of other Bitcoin communities in El Salvador? Is there anything else going on? Or,
I mean, there's a Facebook group, and there, you know, there are some people, but it's not a huge community. Definitely what we're doing here is ground zero for it. We're hopeful. We just had a new president elected here last year, Nayib Bukele, who's in his mid-30s, very forward-looking, technology-focused, and so we're hoping that he will be the, you know, one of the first presidents that really embraces Bitcoin. Also, because El Salvador uses the U.S. dollar, they're not worried about protecting their own currency, so they could, if they really embrace Bitcoin, it would give them a big competitive advantage.
He's got a, you're telling me he's very popular. What was it, 88% approval rating?
Yeah, 88% approval rating right now. It's unheard of.
Yeah, but tell me about his, because you told me about his campaign.
Yeah, El Salvador has a real history of corruption in the political sphere from both parties, both on the right and the left. And so he came in as an independent, and I can't remember the exact wording of his platform, but it was along the lines of, there's plenty of money to develop the country if you guys would just stop stealing it. So that was the gist of his campaign slogan.
So what's next for, let's talk about locally, El Zonte, your program. You know, what's stopping you expand this to 100 kids, to 500 kids?
Well, I mean, mostly just time and resources. Okay. We're in the early stages of it. So we actually have another town that's 3 hours from here that we're getting ready to roll the program out in also.
Right.
And so we'll kind of be on both ends of the country seeing this happen. And it's also a tourist destination. So that's another key component that we think is that if tourists know that they don't have to convert money and they can come in and just have Bitcoin on their phone, that's another great use case of them not having to try to find an ATM or kind of like you said, to arrive here and not have any and not be able to buy anything. They know that they can go to these communities and just use Bitcoin.
Okay. So I'm trying to imagine your grand plans here because you must have thought ahead, right? Okay, so you've got two cities. Is your grand plan for the whole of El Salvador? Or are you even thinking about other countries, thinking about Nicaragua, Honduras? Are you, what's the big plan, Mike?
I mean, the sky is the limit, really. But we are focused on El Salvador. I have a tendency to go in too many directions sometimes, so I'm trying to keep my focus here. What we'd really like is for the government to see the positive impact that this could have and to see the Salvadoran government get behind this and to be known, instead of being known for a high murder rate, being known for this company or this country that's really pushing technology and embracing Bitcoin and kind of, we'd like El Salvador to be known as the crypto coast of Central America. So that's why we've called our project Bitcoin Beach.
Have you reached out to the government at all?
I've tweeted at the president several times, but he has not responded yet. So we'll keep trying.
If anyone knows the president of El Salvador, please ask him to get in touch with Mike. We'd really appreciate that. Okay, so the thing that when I bumped into Uruguay and you said, would you like to come to El Salvador? I was like, oh, murder capital. Right, first thing that came to mind. And just before I went to Bolivia, I was like, oh, Bolivia's really dangerous. Cocaine. And that's what I thought about because you have these natural kind of cliches that you've heard about. And then, you know, I read the reports on Bolivia, both for La Paz and Santa Cruz, you know, don't go out at night, only use approved taxis, don't have a watch if you're attacked, you know.
Yeah.
And I was quite nervous going there and nothing happened. I felt as safe as I felt in central London. Coming out here, I was, you know, had the nervous excitement of coming to a country I've heard so much about. Yeah, you know, I've watched about gangs, I've watched about prisons in the country. Feel perfectly safe. And I know it's not the same as Bolivia, but is the reputation of El Salvador fair and is it also frustrating?
I think it's both. I think it is a very dangerous place for a lot of the Salvadorans to live, especially if they're in a gang controlled area. A lot of the families with young kids, their kids come to a certain age and a lot of times they're forced to either join the gang or be killed. And so they're definitely, I don't want to downplay just the tragedy that is playing out here, but we are seeing huge positive changes. In the past year, the murder rate has dropped by 50%,
okay,
which is obviously
huge. Why do we think that is?
I think a lot of it has to do with the new president.
Right.
And he's been both offering positive opportunities and economic growth for the young in the society, and so they're choosing that route rather than the gangs. But he's also been firm with the gangs and is trying to really crack down on them, and especially in the prisons where they control a lot of the activity. He's isolated a lot of the leaders, he's taken away their cell phones, and so he's kind of coming at it from, you know, both with sticks and carrots. And so that's been a big positive change. And El Salvador is just a beautiful country. I mean, you see it here.
It's
just
unbelievable. Honestly, it's stunning.
So the tourism opportunity is huge, and they have great surfing. The waves are amazing here, and so they're really focused right now on developing tourism, specifically around surfing and that crowd.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit more about the gang side of things. When I came, before I came, my assumption was the gangs would be drug-based gangs because it's South America. I assumed there would be local drug dealing and also the trafficking of drugs from certain countries through El Salvador up into the U.S., but that's not the business of the gangs, right?
No, El Salvador's not on the main drug route. I mean, you'll have some drugs that come through, but the main focus of the gangs here is extortion, and it's primarily of small businesses.
So, as I said to you yesterday, it's kind of like a tax.
Yeah, basically. I mean, anything from somebody selling tortillas on the side of the road to the person walking around selling used clothes, depending on the community that they're in, they'll be paying some type of protection money to the gangs. And it's really sad because it's really held back the economy in El Salvador. A lot of people who could grow their businesses choose not to because they don't want to become on the radar of the gangs. And we've known a lot of people who they've been extorted and they've just decided to shut down their business rather than to kind of face that risk.
Because the amount they're being extorted for is too high to make it operationally profitable?
I think both. I think some of them just as a matter of conscience, they don't want to be paying into the system that they don't agree with. And there's always fear that if they extort you once, they're going to come back for more. And so some people have just decided they'll move somewhere else or they'll just go get a job somewhere rather than have a business that will be a target.
And saying no is risky?
Yeah, definitely saying no is risky. I mean, that's why the murder rate's so high here. A lot of the people that are killed are people who have said no to paying the extortion. And so, but hopefully we're seeing that changing, and I think we see even for a lot of the gang members, they realize that's not the road forward. They want something better for their own kids, for their brothers and sisters, and they want the economy to grow. They want there to be opportunity. Part of it is you have had there's a real chasm between the rich and the poor here, and the gangs are somewhat of a reaction to that, of the poor being able to feel like they can fight back and take back some of that power from the rich. But the unfortunate thing is it's usually the poor that are most impacted. The rich have security, and so they're not really impacted by it, and they wind up extorting their poor neighbors. And so hopefully we're going to see that change over the next several years.
Do you think, because you tend to find in developing countries, people don't have laptops. There's no wired internet, but they have mobile phones. They have access to a mobile internet. Do you think a more connected world where perhaps the youth in El Salvador are connecting with or seeing the rest of the world is making them want to live a different life? Do you think that has a positive influence? The reason I ask is when I've interviewed Tae Yong-ho from North Korea, who's the most senior defector. He said the most important thing for North Koreans is to see Western culture. Do you know if that's had any influence?
I think that has had some impact, but it's been both good and bad. I think you see some of the materialism creeping in, and so I would say that's a negative thing. But you definitely see some of the other Western values, especially how women are treated and those sorts of things. You see that kind of changing within the culture where there's historically been a machismo culture here that's been kind of degrading to women. But you see that starting to change as they, see tourists come in, they see women traveling by themselves. And so that's been a positive thing.
Yeah, because you also mentioned there has been a problem with sex trafficking in the country as well. Is that tied to the poor treatment of women, or is that just a sideline business?
I think that's more of a function of just the poverty. When people are desperate and they don't have a lot of opportunities, they fall prey to predators. And so a lot of people will come into communities, they'll promise jobs, they'll promise that they'll take them to the U.S., they'll promise all these things, and then they basically kidnap them and force them into prostitution.
Okay. So talk to me about the future. What's coming up? Tell me about the project. What's coming up for the future of the project? You talked to me about expanding into lifeguarding.
Yeah. So we have a lifeguard program that we're developing here. We were in a coastal city, and there's at least a few people that drown every year here. And so a lot of local kids are either they're fishermen or surfers, so they're strong swimmers. So we're going to do some lifeguard training with them and then actually pay them to serve as lifeguards on the weekends and during the breaks when we have a lot of people here on the beach. And that'll obviously save lives, but it's also teaching responsibility and job skills to these young kids, and we think we'll have a big impact on their future.
And if somebody wants to help support the project, do you need?
So we need both people that will help us kind of think through solutions for banking, and as new wallets come out, some people that can keep us informed on what the best solutions are for what we're doing. But also if people want to donate Bitcoin to what we're doing, we can always use funds for sure. And we have a website that is more of a placeholder right now because I haven't gotten around to build it out, but it's bitcoinbeach.com is the website. And that's Bitcoin Beach is also a handle on Twitter. And so, yeah, we would just love people to come down and visit El Zante and see what we're doing here. And if you have ideas for other projects we could be doing, we'd love to hear it.
Spend some Bitcoin.
Yeah, definitely spend some Bitcoin.
All right, Mike. Well, listen, I appreciate you having me here. It's been a wonderful trip. I'm definitely coming back. I'm going to bring my kids, I think, as well. And I wish you all the best. This is probably one of my favorite, if not my favorite, Bitcoin experiences so far.
Well, awesome. It's been great having you. Make sure your kids bring their Bitcoin because that's all we take here. So,
thanks, Mike. Hello, Jorge.
Hello, Peter.
So you're working with Mike. So it's great to meet you. It was great to meet you in Uruguay. I didn't realize that was your first time on a flight.
Uh-huh.
How did you enjoy the flight?
Good, good. It's my first time, but I really enjoyed the flight and the conference. It's amazing, everything, how I learn. So I'm ready to try to start to teach more kids about the programs. So
how long have you known Mike?
I know Mike almost 10 years.
10 years, wow, yeah. Okay. And what were you doing before the project?
Before, I am a surf instructor.
Okay.
I am working for Make a Big Contest, like for surf competition for the world. So I work making surf magazine. So okay. This is the kind of job I have. So always surfing. But after a few years, I continue to surf, but I feel tired, always teach kids about surf.
Okay.
But I'm thinking in my future. But I know one man, he always come and he asked me how I feel and how it's my family, because I have my daughter in the first year when I meet Mike.
Mm-hmm.
So he started to explain me about the life.
Okay.
So I can understand the life, and he explained me one day the family is the more important than life.
Yeah, I've learned that too late.
So I stop to continue make money and surf. And I start to put more time in my family.
Okay.
After 10 years, I'm here. I change everything kind of life, and I start to continue to explain my body. Family is the more important.
Well, and that's very important in El Salvador because a lot of children do not have their fathers around.
Yeah, this is part of the kind of job I'm working, try to help kids in the communities. They don't have maybe fathers, or the fathers drink a lot of alcohol. So this is the kind of job I make. Try to walk with the kids and try to explain about the life. I explain it's very important to stay in the school. So we have sometimes we have a surf camp. I teach how they need to surf. We're working for they can stay lifeguard. And so we have a surf lesson, skate lesson, Bible studying, what the other, for lifeguard.
Okay.
So we are walking with the kids when they are in the school too. So I very focused to try to walk in this community with every kid. We have almost 120 kids in the program.
Wow.
And we have almost 35 the parents. When I see kids, the fathers, drink alcohol,
uh-huh.
I want to stay really good friends with the son, and then I go for the father. So now I start to work in construction, and the father, for the kids, the father, they drink alcohol, they stop to drink alcohol, and they are working now, not for me, they work with me.
Okay, great.
We working together. I walk with in the life, I teach. You don't need to drink a lot of alcohol for feel better, feel good.
Uh-huh.
So they start to work in the construction. So now they are working in the construction, and the kids are working too. They use no work. It's more like they help in the community, and we help with Bitcoin donation for they can continue the school. So if the father are working in the construction, not drink any more alcohol, the kids are learning surf, Bible, skate, swim, and making money. So the kids is super cool. Everything is good. The father is super happy because he is working. Now he feel like good because he have employed now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the more happy is the mom in the house. When the father is not drinking any more alcohol, the son is making money and learning about a lot of different areas in the community. So when I back in the night to my house, I feel super happy when I know a lot different things is happening, changing in this community.
That's great.
This is part of my life. So I continue to surf because I have my daughter, she surf, my wife surf, and I have now my son, he need to surf.
I've never surfed.
Wow, you need to try. It's super easy.
Okay, so I'm going to come back in the summer with my kids, and you can teach me to surf, yeah?
Yes, please.
What did you first make of Bitcoin when Mike introduced it to you?
Yeah, this is super good question. When I start my program, when I start with the kids, I always teach kids how they need to learn to surf. I explain they need to learn to speak in English. I explain they need to learn to swim. It's very important. So I explain they need to start, continue the school. No stop, they need to continue. But the thing is, I have a friend, he's in ninth grade. He finished the local school, so he need to go to the city. But if he go to the city, he need money. I help every kids in different area, but I don't have money to help kids. So this is when my program, the program we have with Mike, for me, I feel like a stop. Because they want to continue the school, but we don't have money. And he is not my son, for I can put my money in these kids. So I feel super bad. This is the first year. A few years later, Mike explained me about the Bitcoin. And I say, wow, what do you think if we can try to help and support kids with Bitcoin? He said, we need to see how everything works in the past of this year and maybe in the future we can. But now we have six kids on the university.
Wow.
And another group is in the other school. I have another man, he works with us. He drives every day for the kids to the school. And we have the other program with almost 120 kids in the ministry. We work in different areas. They can stay lifeguard, they can surf, they can. We have other kids start to learn English now. And we have other programs to help the community. Like, for example, if we have a family, they don't have money, they don't have, the life is super hard. And maybe in the for the dinner, they don't have nothing for dinner. So they need to go to the bed. But I know it's a kid there. Maybe they hungry in the night. So how you think I feel when I need to help? I feel like I need to help. It's not possible. So with Bitcoin, the kids start to select the family, have this kind of problem. And they start to buy a food with Bitcoin. And they go and put the food in the different house. But Bitcoin pay for this program too. So it's amazing how Bitcoin start to change this community.
Okay. And it's, in some ways, it is a charity, right? It's kind of like a charity program.
Yes, yes.
So it relies on the help and donations of Bitcoin coming in to pay for the program. But I guess one of the good things is if the government could see this program, perhaps they would provide finance towards helping, you know, support lifeguards, supporting cleaning up the environment.
I think with the government, this never happened because you need to make and design one really good program and they can see if they think work, they want to help. But, you know, you can start to work with kids. So they say that you need a paper, documents and everything. So it's hard for this program. So I can, in the beginning, I start to think and I want to work with the government and see. But I see this is maybe 10 years past and never make nothing. They say next year. So I think with the guy who helped this community to put money and Bitcoin for the programs, he make a big difference in this community. And I hear the government, they can start to hear about the programs. So one of the things I'm thinking, maybe one day they say, hey, you know, cannot sell Bitcoin for this program. But I'm excited to hear because I don't know if they want to support this program.
There would be an option to do this program with dollars rather than Bitcoin. Is there any reason why Bitcoin is better than dollars?
Yes, because one of the things is every kid in this community, they have funds. So they can have the money in the blockchain. If they can have like a save money, they don't need to put on the house or another area, maybe they lost. They have the phone, they have the money. They are in the school, they can use it. So this is one. And the other kids, I start to hear they are very excited to continue to trying to find a job. So this is good. They are start to think about how they can make a future. So I think Bitcoin is super easy and fast to use in this community. The store, they start to accept Bitcoin. So for the kids, if they are on the beach and they pass in front of the store, they can buy Coke or drink or something. They have money in the moment. So,
and I guess this would be great if this kind of program could be rolled out across El Salvador, because the country obviously has a lot of problems with youth being attracted to maybe follow a different path in life.
Mm-hmm. This is one of my plan, and now the program, same I start, when I start first time, we don't have Bitcoin. So we start just to try to explain kids. So this, we have this in three different beats in El Salvador now. So the one of my dream is start to use a Bitcoin in different areas in El Salvador and try to change the life in this community in the El Salvador.
Fantastic. Okay, just to finish out, because we've got to go in a minute. If anyone's listened to this and they wanted to help support the program, what kind of help do you need?
I think I am very focused, try to help kids in the area for education, for university, because in future they can support. Maybe they don't have a sponsor in future, but they are the sponsor for the family. So they can save the family in different area. So this is, and the education is, I think, one of the points very important for me.
And if people want to help, how can they help you?
Yes, please. I'm ready. We are open to hear if people want to help in the kids. We have a lot of different areas how they can help. But
and maybe come down and visit El Zonte as well.
Yeah, please. And learn to surf. Surf. Well, it's life.
Yeah. Well, it's been great to meet you. It's great to meet you in Uruguay. Great to meet you here and hang out with you in your home. I met your wife and two kids. The baby.
Yeah.
He's very cute. So it was very great. It was great to meet them all. Hopefully I'll come back and we'll hang out again and you'll teach me to surf and we'll talk about Bitcoin.
Please. I'm ready. I'm waiting for you and excited.
All right. Well, listen, thanks and take care.
Yeah. No, thank you for coming and visit this community and understand more about everything happened about Bitcoin.
Okay, how cool was that? Did you enjoy that? Did you enjoy hearing from Michael about his project? It was great. I really enjoyed it. I mean, El Salvador is one of those places where you hear about so often. And when you research it, it's like it's the murder capital of the world. It's really dangerous. So, you know, I visited it with a certain amount of, you know, anxiety about what I would see. Would I see gangs everywhere? And, you know, that wasn't the case. It does have a huge problem. That's not to minimize it. And I did go into San Salvador and I did notice both a police and army presence. And talking to the locals, there is definitely a problem. But at the same time, I weirdly felt quite safe and I really liked the country. I think it was a beautiful country. I'm not recommending anyone goes to San Salvador and starts wandering around the streets late at night. But at the same time, I want to go back. I'm not put off by what I've heard. I actually haven't been there and seen such a beautiful place. I just really want to go back. I also really like this local outreach program, this social program that Michael's done. I think it's really important what they're doing, just what it gives the kids, this opportunity to avoid gangs and stay in education. But it's also very cool to see Bitcoin being used in this way, to see this kind of circular economy, which is, you know, Bitcoin based, and also the adoption of Lightning as a method of payment. As I said, it's not perfect. You know, there are issues relating to volatility and private key management, but it's a start. And, you know, Michael is seeing the problems and seeing the hurdles, and he's always looking for solutions. So it would be, I'm pretty sure Michael would like to speak to anyone who thinks he can help with the project, but very cool. It's making me want to travel to other countries and find out more. As ever, I hope you enjoyed it. If you do have any questions, you can reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And yeah, massive thanks to everyone who supports the show all year. Doesn't matter whether you're a sponsor or a listener. Anything you have done to support the show, thank you. I want to say a Merry Christmas to all of you. I'm off home in a few minutes. I'm going to get my final flight of the year. I've done 84 this year. I'm tired, but I've had such a great time. Big love to you all. Have a great time with your families, and I will see you soon.